Live, brought to you from the Eternal Word Television Studios in Birmingham, Alabama.
Of Jesus. The most glorious work of all, to praise God in his kingdom.
Moved by the Spirit.
Anyone who lives in love lives in God. And God lives in him.
What a wonderful thing is our church. This whole network is built on trust. The essence of evangelization is to tell everybody Jesus loves you. We are all called to be great saints. Don't miss the opportunity.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to be back. It's almost 3 weeks we haven't seen each other. I've missed you, and I hope you missed me. You know, I went to Spain last week, and it was a very fruitful trip. And on the plane coming back, you know, they have these movies. And I think I ought to write to some of these airlines and ask them. They put the most scariest movies that you could possibly have on air, and I don't know whether they're hoping you'll forget your flight or they're grateful you made it to the ground when it's over. I don't know what the motive is behind it, but I mean, this was so finally I put my little shut my little eyes and I thought, Lord, there has to be something better than this. And I know it's the same on television. And so we just worked and just prayed, and I realized how some of you feel about EWTN. And last week we had our first program for teenagers. And we got a wonderful, wonderful response. I wanted something for teenagers for years. And something that they will listen to, enjoy, and change their life around. So since we've been gone and haven't seen each other for 3 whole weeks, I thought I would be real nice tonight. I'm not going to find fault with anybody. I'm not even going to mention my liberal friends or enemies, whatever they are. I want to talk about heaven. And there's nothing like an airplane ride over the ocean that makes you think of heaven. I mean, it's the perfect, perfect place. First of all, it's the best place to make an examination of conscience. But as we were going, and when we passed Portugal, we went over Portugal, and Sister said, look out the window. And there, to my surprise, was a round rainbow. I never in my life saw a round rainbow, a circle, a perfect circle. And it was very small, and all of a sudden there was one around it, the second one, and then there was a big one around that one. And something in the middle, I couldn't figure out what color it was. And it was with us at least 200-300 miles. Just went where we went. I was amazed. And I'm sure some of you that are very knowledgeable about stars and quasars and will give me an explanation. But I didn't need one. It was so awesome. Awesome about the presence of God everywhere and his angels. So tonight I thought, what a wonderful introduction to talk about heaven and what it must look like. Have you ever thought of that? What is heaven like? Well, it's nothing, absolutely nothing, like it is here. We think we're very smart that we can get in a plane and after 9 long hours we arrive in New York or Atlanta, wherever you're going. And that's wonderful. But now if you're talking about an angel, he travels with the speed of thought. How do you like that, huh? If I were an angel, and I bet they're all thanking God, I am not. If I were an angel and I would say, I would like to be in Rome, I'd be in Rome that fast. So if you want to be humbled of all the inventions and great things that man has come up with, it's still a shadow of the power of the littlest angel. And that littlest angel may be your guardian angel. And I was amazed in Spain as we went from, every morning we had to work hard the whole trip, but we managed either in the morning or evening, mostly evening, to get to a mass. And some of the churches there have 6-7 masses a day. And you saw all these people, the churches were full at 7, 8 o'clock, every hour on the hour. And you saw the most gorgeous angels in wood, in plaster, in murals, in marble. And you just have to be filled with God. Because heaven is such an awesome place and we're all going there, but nobody's in a hurry. You know, we're always surprised when people die. As if it's unusual. I mean, I got news for you. You're going. And death is an awesome thing. You will see God face to face very quickly. And if you ever were attached to anything, I can tell you what's going to happen 1.5 hour after they cart your body out. All your friends, relatives, brothers, sisters, and children will begin in your bedroom and take out all the drawers. They've always wondered what you had in them. From the time they were kids, what in the world is in that closet? So if you're ever attached to anything, it's a good meditation to get detached. Drawers will open, wills will be read, everybody be angry. Even over commodes, they get angry. That's why I tell you, all you old people, if you got it, spend it now. I know a very good place that you could spend it. But you see, there is in death an awesome detachment. But we have to think of where we're going. We're on our way to heaven. Oh, some of you may not be, huh? Because you live sinful, sinful, sinful lives. And you need to repent. You need to come back to Jesus. And you can do it tonight. Don't miss your opportunity of going to heaven. And I'm going to read a little bit for you from the book of Revelation, otherwise known as Apocalypse. And it says here that, it said, the Spirit possessed me and I heard a voice behind me. Now heaven is a place and a state. It's a place and it's a state, meaning you will have a definite degree of holiness and it's sealed when you die. You know, the most wonderful thing about death is, I think, not only would you see God, but you'd be totally incapable of ever offending Him again. I think that's awesome. You will never be, your will is set and gone. You will never be able to make a decision against God. Wherever you are when you die interiorly, in your level of love or degree of love, that's what you get forever. You know, God is not like Social Security. I got news for you. Social Security, I understand, takes your 10 best years. See? They clump your 10 best years together. I don't know how they got so generous, but they clump your 10 best years together, and that determines what you're going to get. Not so heaven. What it is, what you are at death, that's it. So some of you better pep up. Change your lives, because it may come before you know it. But anyway, let me tell you what you may have or what you may miss if you don't get the confession. I had a sad experience the other day. A woman wrote to me, 84. It took her months to get somebody to go and hear her confession. When the poor priest got there, he was very impatient. And everything she said, he'd say, "That's not a sin. Get on with it." He's lucky I wasn't there. He's even luckier he wasn't hearing my confession. I would have had five other things to say. Because this woman was so disheartened, that she didn't know whether she went to confession or not. See? Confession is one of the most awesome gifts God has ever given us. I can go in an alien of the kingdom and of God and come out holy, totally forgiven. And we all have a right to that. All of us have that right. Well, anyway, this voice said to St. John, write down all that you see in this book. And he said, I turned around to see who spoke to me. And when I turned, I saw seven golden lampstands surrounded and a figure like the Son of Man dressed in a long robe, tied at the waist with a golden girdle. Now, can you imagine at your death, suddenly from a distance, here comes the Lord, and he's dressed just like this in awesome glory. And when I turned, he said his head and his hair were white as white wool or snow, and his eyes like a burning flame, and his feet like burnished bronze. Oh, can you imagine that? Some of you have good imaginations. Well, don't tell me you don't, because that's what gets you in so much trouble. Right now, you could tell me in a very detailed way exactly who hurt you 20 years ago, what they said, what they did, what they wore, and where they were. I know you could. You can, so don't tell me you don't have an imagination. In his right hand, he was holding seven stars. And his face was like the sun. You see, in this life, beauty is temporary and elusive. It's here and then it's not here. And that's why our churches, now they're building new ones, look like barns. There's no beauty. If you notice, what would the enemy of God, who we call Satan, what would he really want to do in this world? Number one, he would want to destroy the incarnate word. He would want to destroy everything that resembles Jesus. Everyone who loves and adores Jesus, he would want to destroy his church and do away with two awesome things, the Eucharist and Our Lady. He would also want to say that all the miracles in the Gospels are false. Then he would plant doubt into your mind, you see? Then he would want one other thing that we're not we're not catching on. He would want to destroy all beauty. Have you ever noticed how ugly things are getting? I mean, what people consider art is pure ugly. Music has become noise. And people who play this music look like they went bongo, you know? They look nuts. And the nuttier they are, and the nuttier they look, everybody's out there yelling and screaming, bedlam, bedlam. See, the enemy wants to take away from our churches, from shrines, from any semblance of beauty. Why? Because he's so ugly. And beauty is a part of God. So when things beautiful become ugly, then we're getting a sample of the two kingdoms, heaven and hell. You know, they showed the news on the airplane. Of course, you never know when you're in a plane whether it's new news or old news or whatever. But even the ads are ugly. The movies are grotesque. I don't know why they want to look like monsters. I mean, it must take a tremendous amount of makeup to make any actor or actress look that bad. Why is so many things getting ugly? Because their battle is on. The battle of the church, the battle for the world, the battle for your soul. And that's what you got to know. And that's why tonight we want to look at heaven. And when St. John saw him, he said, I fell in a dead faint. And he touched me with his right hand and said, don't be afraid. It is I, the first and the last, the beginning and the end, the living one. I was dead and now I am alive. I hold the keys of death and of the underworld. Whew. Now write this down, the things that are to come. And then he goes on and talks to these poor seven churches who weren't doing too hot. And we know what they did. What did they do? They lost their first love. You know, Lent is early this year. Early part of February, I think. And we need now to start to examine our conscience so that this Lent will be our very, very best. Very best. You know, I read a prophecy of, I think it was the 3rd or 4th century, way back. And it said that in the end times, there would be great persecution and a lot, everything that seems to be happening today, and it's happened in the past also. But at that time, it says that the saints of those days would be more glorious than any of the saints in the past, and that they would compare like the cedars of Lebanon to a shrub. I thought, wow. In fact, Blessed de Montfort, Saint de Montfort, said the same thing. He said, the saints of the latter days, end of this century, would become greater in comparison like the cedars of Lebanon to a shrub. Can you imagine the amount of sanctity that is God is handing out, the amount of graces to everybody? We are all called. And in this day of great evil, I think one of the cardinals recently called it the Luciferian sin, meaning I will not serve. But in these days, if you hold on to your faith and you receive the sacraments and you believe in Jesus and his Eucharistic presence, and you can plead with Our Lady for hope, you are capable, and the grace is here for you to become a great, great saint, as the cedars of Lebanon are compared to a shrub. What an awesome day, what an awesome time we live in. And this is what awaits us. In my vision, I saw a door open in heaven. And I heard the same voice. The voice was like a trumpet. Don't forget now, heaven is a place. It's not an idea. It's a place Jesus promised me. He promised you. And it said, the voice said, come up here. I will show you what is to come. And the Spirit possessed me, and I saw a throne. This is what you're going to see when you die. You may have a little detour, yeah? We call it purgatory. All you that don't believe in it, call me while you're there. I'll pray for you. He said, though, with the Spirit possessed me, I saw the throne, and one who was sitting on the throne and the person sitting there looked like a diamond and a ruby. Oh. A diamond and a ruby. This is not a little bitty 1 carat or 2 carat. This is not. When I went years and years ago, went to Washington, I think at the Smithsonian have that huge diamond. Was it the Hope Diamond or some kind of diamond? It's all locked up and behind 5 sheets of glass. It was about that big, and it glittered just like that. Now this is a whole person that looks like a diamond and a ruby. And there was a rainbow encircling. Ah, what do you know about that? It was encircling the throne, going around, just like we saw. And it looked like an emerald. Can you imagine that? Why are we afraid to die? Why are we so afraid to live? When the sufferings and the pain that you have are going to make all of this brighter, and give your heart more and more and more joy. Around the throne were 24 other thrones. Seated were 24 elders with white robes and golden crowns. And flashes of lightning were coming on the throne and peals of thunder. That's an exciting place, you know? Reminds me of the Irish woman who was dying. I haven't thought of that woman for ages. And the priest was there to give her the last rites and send her on to the kingdom. And she said to him, oh, Father, I can't go. And he said, why? Because I don't have any tea up there. Tea to you. She couldn't go to heaven. There was no tea in heaven. Oh, she said, Molly, there's a lot of it there. He said, there is? Oh, there's all kind of tea up there. There's Benedicimus tea and Adoramus tea and Benedicamus tea. She said, really? He said, really? I'm off, Father. I'm off. Isn't that funny? I would think of that today. I heard somebody that loved horses. Now, I like horses, but you can really go too far with anything, you know? And she said she couldn't go to heaven if there wasn't a horse. I said, well, maybe God will give you one all by yourself. Who knows? But now, between the throne and myself was a sea. A sea. Made of glass like crystal. Now, can you imagine the difference? What do we got here? Asphalt. Asphalt. And none of us want to die. We want to cling to the asphalt. The asphalt jungle. It's not very good because in the wintertime it cracks and you got these big holes everywhere and your car goes boom and you almost hit the top of it. And then if it's concrete, you have miles and miles and miles of concrete. And if the sun's shining, you swear the whole front of that road is water. When you get to it, it's dry as anything else. We cling to these things, and that's fine. That's where we are. That's where we live. That's where we're happy. That's where we're sad and miserable and ecstatic in this world. And this is where we work out our salvation. But think. Think of a road that was like crystal. And according to Don Bosco, vision of Dominic Savio, he saw Dominic Savio in heaven, and he came towards him, and he said, oh, how beautiful you are. He said, what is this place? Is it heaven? And Dominic Savio laughed and smiled, and he said, oh, no. And Don Bosco, it's in one of his books on his life, saw ahead a most beautiful light. And he said to Dominic Savio, is that the light of glory? And he said, no, no, no. To see the light of glory, you need a special grace from God. And Don Bosco described what he saw in this antechamber of heaven. At this point, all the liberals are going to faint right in their seats. But Don Bosco saw trees. Trees. With golden trunks and silver leaves. I wouldn't even think of something like that. And if we did, we'd say, I wonder what I could sell that tree for. I probably would think of that. God, if I had that down there, I'd build 5 networks, you know? One tree would build me 5 networks. But see, we're kind of gross sometimes. That's all we think about. But I want you to see this place that Don Bosco saw and many others. They were so beautiful that you could not even imagine. People have stolen, killed, went to jail for a diamond. That big. And that's a big one. But here now, you see, there's such a difference. And then he says, I saw in the right hand of the one sitting on the throne a scroll. And he called, he said, is there anyone worthy to open the scroll and break the seals? No one was worthy. And this is where Jesus comes up, and the lamb, and he takes the scroll and he eats it. And that's what you and I should do. You know, I got for Christmas something I hold very dear. Well, I got it. And I carry it in my pocket every day. You'll never guess what it is. It's a Bible. Isn't that cute? It's the entire Old and New Testament. And I wish I had 1,000 of them. I'd give them to you, but I don't. Here is the Bible. I know. Here's the entire Old and New Testament. Look at that. Isn't that great? Don't write for one, I don't know where they got it. But I hold this as a real treasure because I can call, if you remember the Israelites were warred on their forehead, you remember? And on their door when they walked, before they walked into the door, they kissed it like that. And this is the entire Old New Testament. In fact, one of my sisters could read it. That's what you call good eyesight. No, I can't read it. In fact, here is a epistle to Timothy. And I think I'm blessed because I carry his word in my pocket. And that's what you need to remember. When a friend of mine went to Russia and he snuck a Bible in, and somebody saw it, walked up to him and said, "Could I have a page?" He said, "Sure." And he tore a page up. Well, it wasn't a half hour past when person after person came and said, "Can I have a page?" All they wanted was a page. They didn't care where it was from. And by the time he left Russia, all he had was a cover. All they wanted was one page. And here I'm carrying in my pocket all the Old and New Testament. That small. I feel comforted just to know if I put my hand in my pocket, I'm touching the Word. In my hand is the whole Word of God. And it's a comfort. If I ever find out where you got these, we'll do something about it. But I just want you to carry the Word and the glory that is to come in your heart, in your mind, in your soul. And don't let all these newfangled theologians fool you. You need the catechism, you need the You want a non, this new inclusive language is sending everybody up the wall. We all need to pray that the Holy See will say no. You say, "Well, why are you all excited?" Well, let me read you something, or let me tell you something. In the New Testament, it reads, and Gabriel said, "Hail Mary, full of grace." In the Inclusive Language Bibles, it says, "Hail Mary, favored one." Ooh, there's a big difference. You're favored, especially if you're Catholic and you can receive the Eucharist. Brother's favored, he's got a vocation. You're favored if God has given you grace upon grace. I'm favored. We're not sinless. And at that point, Mary, full of grace, is one of the scripture passages to prove the Immaculate Conception. It's important, very important, because you not only change doctrine, you deny it. I just want to put that little thought in your head because it's a very serious situation. I want you to pray for it. That we take the Word as it is and we love it. So I get the catechism, your Bible, and go to Mass and communion frequently, and confession. And I can guarantee you with those three things, nobody will ever fool you or make you uneasy about your faith. We have a call. Hello?
Hello, Mother.
Hi, where are you from?
Stuartsville. My name is Barbara. I'm from Stuartsville, New Jersey.
You're a little muffled, so can you speak a little louder?
My name is Barbara,
okay.
And I'm from Stuartsville, New Jersey.
All right.
And I did miss you very much.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're back.
Good,
and Mother, your show has been so tremendous. I mean, I get up every day. I can't wait because there's something new every day.
Thank you.
I go on pilgrimage and I see Bob and Penny Lord, and I'm here and I'm there. I can't even do my work anymore.
Thank you, Jesus.
But I wanted to ask you, my husband has been diligently waiting for this answer. He wanted me to call you many times. He was baptized in the Catholic Church, and due to whatever circumstances, his mother changed the religion and they became Baptists. He then stopped going to the Catholic Church, but never received his communion nor his confirmation. Now my son-in-law is taking instructions and coming into the church who was never baptized or anything of the other sacraments. But now I see that my husband, he's been going to church with me quite regularly, but he refrains from coming really into the church to the rest of the sacraments only because when his mother died, I was there, I was present. She begged him, right minutes before she died, not to become a Catholic. And I stood there in astonishment. I couldn't believe my ears. And I always thought that she never really accepted me, and I knew then why. So he feels that he wants to know, if he did come into the church fully, would he be hurting his mother in any way with the promise that he made her? I think it bothers him very much, but I think also he would like to come in. I'll hang up and wait for your answer. Thank you so much, Mother Angelica. Thank you.
Well, he cannot honor that request in the first place because obedience is legitimate only when it gives a legitimate order or demand. And no one can say to you, please promise you will not enter the church. You see, that's a terrible thing. We hope when she saw Jesus, she was repentant. And if she's in purgatory, she may be there until he comes into the church. We don't know that. And I know some of you are not going to like what I just said, but that's okay. That's my humble opinion. But you see, first of all, he's not obliged to obey that, because to have the light to come into the church and not do it because your mother said no, see, she has no right to say that. And he has a perfect right not to obey that. My poor mother had a royal Italian fit when I left the convent, left for the monastery. My entire family, I understand, could be heard down the street. And I knew when I left that none of them liked it. They would be very angry and very upset. But we must obey God above all things, see? And to be called into the church is a great, great grace. And I feel that he should come home. And if his mother was repentant, and she would have great glory in heaven, greater glory, what we call accidental glory. You know what accidental glory is? Well, say you were the healthiest, the happiest person in the whole wide world. Can you imagine that? You can't. Well, that's okay. But say you were. And all of a sudden you looked out the window and you saw the most gorgeous sunrise you ever saw. What happens to you? You went, oh, wow. Well, it didn't last all day. You know, you got your work to do. You got all these things to do. But in heaven, that's what are called accidental glory. It doesn't increase your glory. It doesn't increase your state, but it gives you that spurt of joy. And he is not at all obliged. You know, he cannot, even if he said, yeah, I promise, but you can't keep a promise like that. His obedience is to God first, and that request was not a legitimate request, because it was against receiving the Eucharist. And I'm sure your mother-in-law was maybe told terrible things. And she may have been totally ignorant of the beauty of the church, the sacraments in the church, the holiness of the church. And if she never knew that, you see, her request was just unfounded. So if your husband's there or wherever, I would say, come home. Come back. And you will find such joy, such unbelievable joy. We have another call. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, where are you from?
I'm from Illinois. My name is Ryan.
And what is your question?
Why does the Mass have ring three bells?
Why do we ring the bells?
Yeah, three times.
Yes, we ring them three times.
Why?
Because of the wonderful, wonderful event that's taking place. You see? It's a sign of joy. It's also a sign of a moment in the Mass when Jesus comes down to us in the Eucharist. When that priest says, "This is my body." After that, it's a sign, the bells are a sign that, oh, what an awesome thing. In Italian festivals in my day, we used to have fireworks, and the bells would ring. The joyful news that Jesus has come into our midst. Now, they've taken that away, unfortunately. We ring them. And we ring them to make you alerted to the great event that has just occurred. Jesus is in our midst once more. What an awesome thing. And that's why we ring the bells. We have another call. Hello?
Hello, Mother. I love you, and I love watching your show. I was raised a Catholic, and I've always wondered, how can a person be happy in heaven if someone they love very much, like their sister or their brother, never didn't make it there, if a loved one didn't make it there? I've often wondered. Thank you.
Well, that I know on earth it's hard to understand, you see, but when we get to heaven, we will see things as God sees them. And we will also understand the infinite justice of God. We will also understand that the person in hell was not judged to go to hell. He chose that hell himself, you see. Also in heaven, our holiness and our union with God is so absolutely perfect and so intense that it is not possible for our heaven or our happiness to be marred by the reality that a person we loved on earth didn't make it. We will know fully that person on earth was not the person I thought he was. And that the judgment of God was not something he imposed, that God imposed, but the soul himself turns away. It's hard for many people to understand, but I understand it in these days, the last 4 or 5 years, better than I have my whole life. Because I have seen people so adamant against God. That I think if God, Jesus stood right in front of them, they would say, "I don't love you." I hate to say that, but a man we know died just saying that. "I don't want to go to heaven. Send the shivers up my spine." And we can't imagine that, but it's unfortunately true. Unfortunately true. So we have to understand that in heaven, it is not possible for us to be unhappy because our heart and mind and soul have all been changed totally to the image of God, and we are so beautifully filled with that love that nothing can decrease it, even if someone we loved was not there. We will know for sure they chose not to be there. And we have another call. Hello?
Hello, Mother.
Where are you from?
I'm calling you from Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Wonderful. And what is your question?
My question, Mother, is I was speaking to a friend of mine who is not a Catholic, but who is a person of faith, and they asked me one day, is Jesus Christ coming back? And so, of course, I said, yes, he's definitely coming back, and I pointed them to the book of Revelation and what the Lord has told us about his coming and the creation of the new heavens and the new earth, and that we will be without pain, suffering, death, etc. And so he said, well, if we will not have death or suffering or pain, does that mean that there will be no new life? Because he said one of the most beautiful things in this world is new babies being born. And he said, I can't imagine a heaven without babies. So I thought that's a very good question, because we know that God creates, and we know that Christ is the eternal Word who creates. So is it possible that in heaven, although we are told there will be no marrying or giving in marriage, is it possible that we could have a heaven where God would not continue to create new human life? So I'd like to know what your thoughts on the subject are, whether you think that God will continue to create new human life, and if so, how he might do so.
Yeah. Well, the Church has taught, and has taught for centuries, when the final days, the end of the world, there will be no more marriage, and there will not be any more children being born. It's not possible for children to be born in heaven. It's a whole new, wonderfully new state and place in heaven. When the end, final end comes, and I think we're far away from it, but it will come, no question of that. When it comes, though, that will be the end of everything we know here on earth. The way it's lived, everything will be changed. But there will be an end to God creating people. Procreation will be at an end. If it were not, you'd have procreation in heaven, and then that would not be, that's impossible. We have a whole new state, even here. Our bodies will not be the same. They'll be a lot better. You're not going to have that wart on your chin, and you're not going to have that bald head, and you're not going to have flat feet, and you're not going to have all of the things that are imperfect, all the things that are trying to us, all the things that our desires are, we suffer from the consequences of original sin. And nobody can deny that. See? When the liberal says there's no need for baptism, that is terrible, because we need to be baptized. We need to be brought back to the Lord. That original sin needs to be wiped away. And even then, we still have, little bitty kids will be jealous if a brother or sister's born. All you parents have that experience. And some, you'll have twins. One will be very generous to a fault, and the other one, uh-uh. I told you the twins that came to see me one time, and they had these great big all-day suckers, just big, licking away. And one came in, and as soon as she saw me, she hid her sucker right behind her back. And the other one ran up and said, you want a lick? Well, they were about that big already, at that young age. The selfishness, jealousy, all those things in us come out all during our lifetime. And every so often you get something you're so surprised at. I didn't know I did that. I didn't know I could feel that way. So, you see, we have to understand that in heaven, there's such a different total state. The desires we have here, legitimate or not, that's what the Pharisees asked Jesus about, that poor woman who married seven brothers. Poor woman. I mean, Lord, save us, all in the same family. I mean, boom, 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 boom. I feel sorry for the seventh man. He must have thought I'm a dead duck. Here she comes, I am a dead duck. And he did. I mean, wipe her. I mean, what is she going to do in heaven? I mean, that was a real question in their mind, you see, because, well, whose wife is she? Said she had all seven. She'll have a high place in heaven. Seven times. Now, see, the Lord said, no, no, he said, there is no Mary in heaven. And is that to say, and I understand your quandary and your question, there will come a time when marrying and babies being born will end. That is God's prerogative to decide. That's why abortion is so evil, because man decides, or a doctor or whatever, whether there will be life and all. And of course, partial birth abortion is hideous. Not even Hitler thought of that. And so in this day and age, I sad to say that there are atrocities that multiply. But in heaven, it will not be so. And you're right. I mean, birth is such a beautiful thing. And babies are beautiful. And God, that was God's way of procreating the world. I think it's an awesome thing. But in heaven, it will not be so. We have another call. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, where are you from?
I'm from Palos Heights, Illinois, Mother.
And what is your question?
My question, it regards what you were speaking of earlier tonight about getting ready in Lent and getting ready for our penance and trying to grow closer to the Lord, which makes me think that the Lord has different places for us and higher places for some of us than others. Once you get there, and you're in the place you're supposed to be in heaven, how will it make any difference to you as to whether you're higher or lower? Because you'll be happy as you are right where he placed you.
That's right. There's no jealousy in heaven. The little flower, you know, had a hard time with that. And so she asked her sister Pauline about it one time, and Pauline took two glasses. And she took one glass about this big and one about that big. And she filled them to the top. And she said, now, what do they look like? She said, they're full. He said, well, that's how it is in heaven. Everybody is so filled with the love of God. Their capacity is filled to the brim. So there's no jealousy, see. And one may have a higher degree than another. And that depends upon us here. It doesn't depend upon ourselves, no, because grace is the root of everything. It does depend on our cooperation, see. And that's why confession is so important, see. Even if you've committed a grave sin, confession wipes it out. And you not only start over, you can start way ahead because you're humbled by it, see. And so in heaven, there will be an awesome gratitude to God, beautiful gratitude to God for everything he has done. And we will know how good God was to us. You know, every day I thank the Lord for all the miracles he does for us that I don't see. I think we'll be surprised in heaven how good God was to each one of us, and we never saw it. We called them accidents, we called them good luck. Oh, it was the Lord. And so for that reason, there can be no jealousy. We're filled. And even if I don't reach that degree of God, union God desired of me, I'm there. And I will be happy even with less. Because the happiness in heaven is so intense and so awesome. And one of the most beautiful things about heaven is it will never, never end. You know, one of my sisters, their class had a reunion. I don't know why anybody wants a class reunion, but anyway, this picture was filled with all the people in her class 10 years ago. They were all old, they all looked old, and they all looked the same age. You know? And they said they had a good time. I'm glad. I can't tell you what I thought. But oh, dear. But but see, in heaven, it's not going to be that way. We'll know everybody. If Mother Teresa died tonight, I hope she doesn't, she's not going to be full of wrinkles in heaven. See, she's going to be a total beautiful woman, probably looking like she would have been at 33. And she would be absolutely phenomenal, for her degree of holiness would be, I'm sure, so great. You see? So in heaven, we will enjoy each other's holiness. There are a few people we may go to and say, I never thought you'd make it. And he'll probably say to you, well, kiddo, I never thought you would either. But you'll be happy together forever. Just imagine your dearest or greatest enemy you will love with all your heart. Well, that's all I can say about heaven. Bye now.